Hello and welcome to another edition of Basketball, a 2022 edition of the podcast. I am Sean Woodley.
Happy New Year. I'm Katie Heindel.
Hi, and today's show is brought to you by Rasheed Wallace, who on this day back in 2002, 20 years ago, which, boy, that is upsetting to say out loud, he scored 30 points, had 8 boards, 3 assists, a steal, and 2 blocks on 13 of 20 shooting in a Portland Trailblazers win over the Philadelphia 76ers, Allen Iverson's Philadelphia 76ers. A nice little game here from Rasheed Wallace against his hometown team. I'd like to see what his all-time career numbers were against the Sixers. I didn't pull that up. That's fine. But Katie, any thoughts on Sheed against the Sixers? Does that bring any sort of memories to you? There weren't any really like playoff matchups, I guess, between Rasheed and the Sixers at any point because he kind of didn't cross over at the right time. But, 20 years ago today, Rasheed Wallace doing big things. I'm still kind of stuck on that 20 years thing. It's making me quite sad.
Every day that goes by is just farther away from a time when Rasheed Wallace was in the NBA. That's just too bad.
It's very true. However, Katie, it's not always the case that our favorites are no longer in the NBA because just before we came on the podcast here today, some big breaking news. Greg Monroe continuing his run throughout the NBA. Was on a 10-day with the Wolves, but has just signed with the Washington Wizards. Katie, I need your in-the-moment response to this. This is big news that happened literally a minute before I jumped into the call.
It's great. Does this count as though, because he's on the Go-Go, Capital City Go-Go roster, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So is this just like when, is this an assignment? You know what I mean? Or is it a two-way, like, that's what I'm trying to figure out.
I think it's like a 10-day hardship deal. I think that's, okay. That's the deal. Yeah, he's in there for 10 days because the Wizards have COVID.
I love it. It's great. He doesn't have to uproot himself, which is even better. You know, I assume he has a residence in and around the DC area. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I don't know where the Go-Go play, but I assume it's close to the Wizards.
It's Capital City, which I'm assuming is DC, uh-huh. But it could be any capital city, I suppose. Isn't like every town in America called Capital City per the movies?
No. Oh. Anyway, thrilled for Greg. What a great person. Great to see him back in the league.
Yeah, have you watched any of his work with the Timberwolves so far this year? He played 3 games on his previous 10 day.
No, averaged 6
points and 7 rebounds. No, you're not in there for 7 points, 7 boards, 4 assists, Greg Monroe? Come on now, Katie.
I'll watch highlights. Sean, like, I have a hard enough time watching games, regular games, so
sure.
No. I'll watch highlights.
Fair enough. Well, I'm hoping that you're going to tune into the next Wizards game with bated breath to see him continue on his career. Katie, do you know how many teams now with the Wizards being added that Greg Monroe's played for in his NBA career?
I'm going to say about, what do you think, like 7? 6 or 7?
It's 8 now that the Wizards are on board. I guess he has to play a game for them to technically be his 8th team to play with. But yeah, Detroit, Milwaukee, Toronto, Boston, Phoenix, Minnesota, and Philly. Just continuing on. He had a whole 2 seasons where he wasn't in the NBA at all. So very, very happy to see him back and kicking. He got to skip the bubble seasons and the garbage seasons where it was all fake and now is back for real basketball. You know, that thing that's happening right now. Real basketball where all the teams are healthy and definitely playing their real players. Today's show, Katie, we're gonna kick off the new year by talking about some good stuff and some happy things. Obviously, it's been a weird time in the NBA lately. The game's pretty meaningless, lots of guys not available. It's starting to come around a little bit, I suppose, as guys return from protocols and all that, but still a pretty substandard product. But one player in particular has been whipping some ass, and that is DeMar DeRozan. Hit 2 game winners over the weekend, 1 on New Year's Eve, 1 on New Year's Day, the first player to ever do that in back-to-back days, I think maybe back-to-back games, period. And he has been like one of the beautiful, wonderful stories of the NBA this season. So we're going to talk about DeMar DeRozan off the top and just kind of dig into what this season has meant and where we're going from here and sort of how his late career renaissance is maybe unmatched in recent NBA history. We'll get into all of that. And then kind of pivoting off of that, because I think we both determined that DeMar DeRozan is one of the coolest players in the NBA. I think you'd be a fool to think anything other than that. We're going to have a discussion of who the coolest player in the NBA is right now. This is an important thing. We've talked about this in the past on previous episodes. It's kind of a constant conversation that goes on for those who really care about the important things in basketball. And I think it's a pretty interesting conversation to be had right now because there are a lot of interesting candidates. We will dig into all of them coming up in the segment we're trying out this week as we try to hand out some cool points around the NBA. Plus, we've got all the irregular stuff we've got, you know, and love. You've got the posts of the week. I guess that's the only other thing on the podcast that we have not already done. So, hey, bear with me. either way, before we get into any of that, Katie, it's been a while since we chatted. You know, how are you? How was your holiday? It's been a couple weeks since we did a mainline episode. How have things been in Katie Heindel land?
Good, but I have to admit, Sean, this feels a little bit cursory of you.
What do you mean?
But like you're just like you just remembered you should do this and you're just tacking it on, but that's okay.
No, I did know I wanted to do this. I just got the order of operations screwed up because I'm a bad host, you see.
Okay. I'm good. The year has started off you know, pretty forcefully, like in a busy, good way. I kind of made a point throughout the holidays, like mm-hmm. just leading up to Christmas and then that kind of limbo week between Christmas and New Year's to actually just take that time off. I cheated a little here and there, but for the most part, I did a good job. And I think I honestly needed it because I think it was one of those things where you don't really realize how burnt out you are. So I'm good.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever reached levels of relaxation, the likes of which I reached last week during the week between Christmas and New Year's, the dead zone of the calendar, of course, where nothing should happen or does happen. It was like deep, like my heart rate probably fell a whole lot. just kind of sitting around doing nothing, making puzzles, drinking tea. That was really like five straight days of my life. It was beautiful, but we're back on the grind now, Katie, and we are going to talk about this ongoing NBA season. We're going to dig into DeMar DeRozan in just one second here and talk about the joy that has been watching him so far this year absolutely cook people as a member of the Chicago Bulls. Of course, a reminder, you can go to our Patreon page if you want to support the podcast, patreon.com/abasketball with two H's. You jump in there, you support us. It's $4 US, $5.50 Canadian to be part of our little Patreon family. You get mailbag episodes, you get ad-free versions of the main podcast. Of course, you also get put into our Discord chat, get access to Ask Mailbag questions first and all of that. So please consider joining our little Patreon community. It is much appreciated when you go ahead and do that. And with that, let's get to today's show and dig into the glory that is DeMar DeRozan. All right, we've reached the thing we're talking about this week. And this week, Katie, we're just going to talk about DeMar DeRozan and kind of just dig into all the joyful little bits of his incredible all-NBA, all-star worthy start to this NBA season, his first with Chicago, of course. It's been a ton of fun, and I guess the sort of exclamation point on everything that's gone on so far with him this season came over the weekend with the two back-to-back winners on Friday and Saturday, both with the Bulls trailing, so there's like extra heft and weight added to those as well. He's been freaking incredible. The Bulls are the best team in the Eastern Conference right now. They're an absolute delight to watch, and DeMar has been their best player and has clearly been like the best free agent signing of the summer. One of the best free agent signings, like non-LeBron division, I can remember in a very long time. He's been outstanding, and Katie, obviously, as Raptors fans, we have a special kinship with DeMar DeRozan and watched a lot of his career, a lot of the sort of ascendance and build up to becoming the player that he is today. And now it's just like this final package, and like the appreciation seems to be pouring in from the entire basketball world in the way it never really has before. It's been awesome. Katie, what has it meant to you to watch DeMar DeRozan have the season he's had? And like, I guess take me through your sort of thought process and feelings as he's doing that thing over the weekend where he's hitting those game winners and is the story of the basketball world.
I think it's a very deserving full circle to me. I think it's, and I don't mean full circle in the sense that this is where his career ends. I just mean after, you know, you kind of look at his years in Toronto and then this kind of this strange stretch in San Antonio, which I think we'll get to. And then now Chicago, I especially look at, like, it's funny how, I mean, this is all recency bias, I think, at large, though it is deserving. But I remember when he, when that trade happened in the summer and how many people were like, this is the worst trade of of the summer. People didn't understand.
How dare you give up Thaddeus Young?
Well, I think the idea was just like DeRozan wasn't seen as like a huge get, right? And what the Bulls were trying to do and like put together under Billy Donovan and, you know, getting Lonzo, like they had just gotten Lonzo a couple of days before they pulled DeRozan in. But I think now it's very clear what they were trying to do is like they wanted this very even tempered. They wanted a leader, but like they couldn't necessarily forfeit, you know, production. And something that's really funny to me when you look at DeRozan's numbers is because it's like he wasn't bad in San Antonio, but like those were the years he kind of tanked in the stupid, I think, super arbitrary ESPN rankings, which he always still calls out, which I respect. But, you know, he was like 86th. The year before, like his last year in San Antonio. And like you look at his time in San Antonio and he was a great player on that team. He had like career high assist ratings, like all three seasons. I think his field goal percentage went up. He was like, took a kind of interesting backseat to a really young team. He started like playmaking and got pretty good at it. Like his passing improved, but he was still like cutting and, you know, like ripping his way to the basket, like how he had at Toronto. So I think it's interesting to me because what Chicago got was a this culminative player, you know, who had kind of been through the worst thing in his career when he left Toronto, you know, like that betrayal, which I think he also kind of grew out of and grew away from and developed as like a player and a person because of it. So they've gotten this like fully farmed DeRozan that I don't think we've seen yet. And again, I don't mean like this is it for him, but they just got like such a diamond in the rough, you know. And I think if you were paying attention, you realized he was just a regular diamond. It wasn't that it wasn't that hidden. I just think DeRozan's not the kind of he's never been a flashy player. I mean, he's never really been a player that draws too much attention to himself. And unfortunately, you know, you're seeing it now too with like his best friend, Kyle Lowry in Miami, getting so much more attention. It's just like, it's very clear where the kind of public NBA gaze goes and where it falls on and the fact that it doesn't really fall on players like this. So to me, it's fantastic. I also like secretly love that, you know, there's a time that you would cringe when the ball would end up in DeRozan's hands in like with a couple seconds left on the clock. And like noticeably so, I think he made a comment. He made like a funny comment when he was asked on the like in the second game that he hit the game winner. Just like what, like he was asked to just say like everywhere his head goes in those minutes. But he said like something just like, yeah, it's great to be trusted. Like it's great to be trusted to have the ball in those seconds. And I think probably because he recognizes too, like he's missed a lot of those important shots, you know, in his career. Yeah. But I think now it's great that he is that guy.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this with Kyle Lowry before. And I think, you know, not to make it all Raptors-centric or anything like that, but I think both of those guys are kind of interesting examples of this. And there are other guys that are like this as well. I think Chris Paul is a great example of like, I've always kind of viewed, or at least in sort of my maturation as a basketball fan, I've kind of stopped viewing things through the lens of single seasons because I just don't think that tells a proper story of any of these guys. And it's always about, you know, sort of taking what took place in a given season and then what happens after that, the response to it, and the sort of rebuttal when things go poorly. And so, like, I just find DeRozan's whole arc to be incredibly satisfying because of the ups and downs and the sort of, like, the narrative arc to it. You know, he comes into the NBA, he's, like, this sort of like he was branded as being just like this dunker who didn't offer a whole lot. Most Raptors fans were like, Sonny Weems is better than DeMar DeRozan, obviously. Like, there's not even a question here. Like, that was a thing. And obviously, he sort of supplants a guy like Sonny Weems, and then he moves himself to the top of the sort of pecking order within the Raptors within a few years. And then he's part of the turnaround, and that's all wonderful. But there's always this sort of like underlying, you know, disappointment a little bit tied to him because of the playoff disappointments and because of the wonky shooting numbers and the examples of him getting benched in the postseason. You know, that's a really interesting thing about that end of the 2017-18 season, his last in Toronto, is that is one of his best seasons. He's incredible that year. You know, that's where they sort of change the Raptors' offense. He is more of an on-ball, like basically sort of beginning his transition into becoming like a lead sort of pseudo point guard. And it's an incredible season for him. He starts shooting threes a little bit more and all of that too. And it's like, oh, this is a different DeMar. This is going to change. And then the playoffs come around, and in game three against the Cavaliers, he gets benched in the second half as the Raptors are making a really spirited comeback. They almost pulled out that game and make it a 2-1 series. And who knows what's going to happen after that. Obviously LeBron hits that game winner, but that was, you know, the sort of last stand of that Raptors team. Because the next game was just a write-off, and you know, DeMar gets ejected in that one, but the one prior where he gets benched is sort of this like really upsetting low point after a couple of seasons of pretty much exclusively high points. You get in 16-17 when Lowry gets hurt and DeRozan kind of carries the Raptors through the back part of that season, and they go like 14-7 or something like that without Lowry to get into the playoffs, and it's just like this dragging the team along type thing. You know, there were so many moments where it was like, oh, this guy is totally changed. This is a guy that you can kind of build a championship team with. And it all came crashing down in 17-18. And in a lot of ways, he kind of had to rebuild himself, whether or not he was going to change teams or not. And then obviously the deal happens. There's, you know, been plenty of documentation about how all that went down. Even today, as Tyler Tynes wrote a piece for GQ about Masai Ujiri digging back into the trade, just dredging that up again, because boy, people love dredging that trade up, which I guess for good reason. It's a really dramatic and important inflection point in recent NBA history. But I just find like these sort of 3 years that he spent in the kind of in the wilds of San Antonio, where no one's really paying attention to that team. I think they make the playoffs one time. They're not terribly inspiring. And you know, his tenure there kind of fizzles out. Even though, as you mentioned, a lot of really important sort of skill building and, you know, sort of profile changing took place for DeMar during that time. That's where he became essentially a point guard who also played power forward a lot and kind of became this sort of positionless ball handling, you know, initiator that he is now with the Bulls, where, you know, you could just throw a dart at the board and say, oh, what position is he playing today? I don't know. But like he's doing all of these things that are dragging this Bull, and not dragging because this Bulls team's really good, but helping this Bulls team to be as good as they've been and just shoot past all these expectations. It's just a really, you mentioned full circle, and it's not full circle yet because we don't know how it's going to go down this year and all of that. But I just think as far as satisfying career arcs go, DeMar's is right near the top of like recent NBA players. And I'm thinking, Katie, like, can you recall anybody having this kind of late career renaissance where he's in season 13 and is finally kind of getting the plaudits that he's maybe always deserved, but is also playing at a level way higher than he's ever played at before, and thus is receiving even more plaudits than maybe he, you know, deserved in the past? Like, I can't really think of a player who at 32, this deep into his career, kind of has that flashbulb moment where everyone's just like kind of keyed in, like, oh, this guy rocks. Can you think of anybody along those lines right now?
Well, I would say I don't know that it's actually too early to say that this is full circle, because he's on track to have like a year as good as he had his best year in Toronto, which was that 2016-2017 season, you know, just like across the board. And it's early, right? It's pretty early. And you also look at the Bulls team, like, they've been just as impacted by COVID and, you know, missing players as any other team in the league. And yet they've still managed to, you know, maintain this and are like first place, you know, in the East. So I think it's pretty, interesting. I think like it's good to be hopeful. I hope, like, I get nervous about jinxing stuff too, but it doesn't feel that way. It feels fairly sustainable. And as far as, I mean, I like, this is also just where my brain goes, but I like that it goes here is that, you know, he's not having the same kind of like standout season, but that Kyle Lowry is getting seen on the same, like on a different stage with a, like under a greater spotlight, the same season that DeMar DeRozan is. There's something really like beautiful about that to me. Especially just like at where they are both at in their careers, you know? But in terms of like, I don't know, I guess I think of like, I think of Julius Randle a little bit. I think of like campaign with the Suns team last season. Right. I think Chris Paul a little bit, though I think like Chris Paul's is more, I think was more sustained season over season. But like, you know, he landed on some teams that he didn't really necessarily get to shine as much with. I'd say, you know, for him, the dips were in Houston and in OKC. I'd say OKC is a little bit parallel to what DeMar did in San Antonio, though Chris Paul didn't stay there as long, but just this kind of necessary taking a back seat to a really young team and operating more as a leader and like willing, like being willing to give the ball up and not have it in your hands all the time because it's going to make for, you know, a great shot over a good shot. But I think just in terms of like a player that this feels very deserving for, there are players I've always wanted this for. Like, I think I wanted this for Blake Griffin. He seems extremely happy and like a good fit with the Nets, but it's in a different role, you know, than he's had in the past. There's a lot of players I always want this for, but I think it's rare for a player to get this. So I wouldn't say it's like never happened, but in like these exact kind of conditions where it's like you've got him like kind of riding this wave and deservingly too, because this is coming from a lot of skill and a lot of work that he put in, you know, season over season. It's not like he stopped improving himself. He's like kept improving himself all along. And you also have that pairing really well with, you know, a Chicago team that finally feels like it has its legs under them. It's been organized in a much different way. The coaching is there, like the talent is there. And they also like the chemistry seems to be there, which is fantastic. So I think those two things coming together are pretty special.
You know, again, I don't think it's probably right to say it's unprecedented, although it could be. Like it is a like a really sort of special and, you know, the kind of thing that you only get from getting to follow a guy from the time he's 20 years old all the way into his deeper sort of part of his career. I guess the question is, like, I've heard this sentiment a little bit, you know, just from, you know, just chatting with people. And it's like, well, what's he going to do in the playoffs? Obviously, he struggled in the playoffs in the past. It's just going to be the same old movie. And I don't think you can say with any certainty what is going to happen in the postseason. Like, it's really far off. And, you know, what DeMar has done feels a little bit more translatable to the postseason. But my question to you, Katie, is, like, do you care at all how it ultimately winds up for the Bulls either this year or in future seasons with DeMar when it comes to the playoffs? Like, do you fear that another sort of stumble in the postseason where maybe there's this sort of insurmountable Giannis or KD type figure sort of taking up the LeBron mantle that was there with the Cavs against the Raptors all those years? Like, do you fear the potential of this DeRozan renaissance potentially kind of losing some luster if things don't go well in the postseason?
I don't fear it, but I do care because I think it's pretty intrinsic to the way that people are going to view and talk about DeMar DeRozan and like his career and his impactfulness on a team and his value in the market, like all this other stuff that's more personally like important to him, I think. And like, of course, he's also the kind of player who does care about those things. Like he does care about the narrative. I think he's gotten better at keeping it at arm's length. But I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think most players do, and they just don't admit it because we're, you know, like, I don't mean you and I, but there is this kind of really maniacal, like self-cannibalizing idea that like a player shouldn't and can't care about what people think about them because that makes them like less of a competitor, you know? And I mean, that's just human nature. So whether they look and don't talk about it, which I think is probably what more people do, or what DeRozan does. And sometimes he like, you know, talks back to this kind of void spewing all this stuff at him. That's fine. But I think the playoffs will matter. I think they'll also matter because it's interesting to me because usually you see, you know, with like real playoff contenders, like we saw it with Kawhi, right? The regular season doesn't really seem to matter as much and it can kind of be pushed aside once the playoffs roll around. DeMar is doing the inverse of that now. And like, you know, he's showing himself out through the regular season. And I think that reflects pretty well in the kind of player he is. He's more of a worker consistently. But it's also like, it's a really young team. They do seem like, again, like to go back to what I said earlier, like they've come through a pretty difficult stretch in the league with players in and out, sick, or like in COVID protocols, and they've managed to maintain it. So I would say, like, you know, fingers crossed, that does bode well to me for the playoffs, which are a completely different kind of competitive animal. So yeah, like why can't they sustain it? You know, I think, yeah, maybe you haven't seen in Toronto. We didn't, it always came down to a couple bad shots. It wasn't that DeRozan like fizzled out in the playoffs. You know, it was just like you had LeBron there for so many years and you had these kind of like, you were ending up in almost identical situations every postseason. And this postseason will be different. So whether it's against Giannis, it's funny, it's not going to be against LeBron probably unless the Lakers have like a drastic turnaround. But whoever it is, you know, if they make it out of the East and whoever it's going to be in the West, like, I think he's at the stage now where I don't think it necessarily matters. Or there like isn't one boogeyman, you know, like he's head and shoulders with those players now.
Sure. And I mean, he's going to be probably an all-star starter this year, which is awesome. He's probably going to be at this rate an All-NBA player, first team or second team at this rate. Like, he's been one of the 5 or 10 best players in the world this season, which is, you know, regardless of what happens in the postseason, very few guys ever ascend to that level. And it's a really awesome accomplishment. Again, that really sort of great capper. And it's not even the capper because he's 32. There are many years left. He's going to have like this. I mean, he feels especially like a guy who's going to have like an old man game that ages incredibly well. And I can't wait to watch it as he just like schools children with his footwork when he's 39 years old. It's going to be a blast. I guess the last thing on this, Katie, is to sort of maybe touch on something that's gotten a little bit of buzz this year now that he's playing at this level and maybe projecting to play this level for a couple years to come, is his Hall of Fame case. And like, I feel like it's on its way to happening, Katie. Like, he is climbing up the all-time scoring marks right now. He's at 72nd right now at 18,612 points. By season's end, he figures to be top 60, closer to top 50. You know, he might be around like Bernard King at 19,655 is kind of, you know, it's 1,000 points ahead of where he is right now. That's kind of on pace what he should score for the rest of the season at this current pace. Like, that puts him into a range where most guys in that range are Hall of Famers, and he still has many years left to go. And then you factor in it's going to be 5 All-Stars by the end of the season and maybe 6 and a couple All-NBAs, or I guess like a third All-NBA. I mean, it's a pretty growing, compelling case, even with the playoff shortcomings. Like, where are you at on like DeMar? I mean, I don't know if you care. We haven't actually really talked about the Hall of Fame before. Like, I'm not sure if this is something you care about at all, but like, is this something you're tracking now and kind of, you know, refreshing that percentage of Hall of Fame candidacy on Basketball Reference on his page every couple of months? Like, where are you at with DeMar and his potential Hall of Fame case?
No, it's not. I don't really care about the Hall of Fame. I think it's another weird thing that people are incredibly precious about. That doesn't mean I don't think it's important to players. I think it is important to players, and I understand why. It's not important to me, though.
Sure. I mean, I would say I think the preciousness is stupid, and the sort of like gatekeeping of it is silly. Like, just celebrate more players is kind of my view on it all.
I'm more like, I think everybody should be in the Hall of Fame so that,
right,
like, that's where I stand.
That's fair. I mean, I think, you know, I don't like doing this because it kind of undercuts how great Mitch Richmond was. But Mitch Richmond is kind of like the cutoff point for me at this point where it's like, oh, are you better than Mitch Richmond? Yeah, you're in the Hall of Fame because he's in. And like his numbers over his career, better than Mitch Richmond's. So you tell me. I think with a couple more years of people kind of getting acclimatized to it and maybe a more sort of open view of who should be allowed into the Hall of Fame and all that stuff, I think it's going to happen here at some point. He's just going to accumulate a ton of numbers too, right? Like, he's been a really, really effective player for a very long time. And at some point that has to matter in addition to everything else. So I am certainly keeping an eye on it. Do I think it's a lock by any means? No, I don't think he's in like Kyle Lowry territory yet, but I do think it's probably coming, and it's something that people are going to have to get accustomed to saying is a Hall of Famer DeMar DeRozan, which would be really, really goddamn cool. Anyway, Katie, speaking of cool, we're going to go into the next segment now and dig into a list of the coolest players in the NBA this season. It's a pretty robust list, I think. I have a list of about 10 guys on my short list to be the coolest. We're going to run through our own personal criteria for coolness and what sort of we're looking for. I think we kind of have similar sensibilities in that, but either way, we're going to dig into all of that and dub the coolest player in the NBA coming up in the segment we're trying out this week in just 1 second. All right, this is a segment we're trying out this week, and this week we are talking about a thing that I am not familiar at all with. It's coolness. Katie, we are going to be digging into the list of the coolest players in the NBA this season. I've been thinking a lot about this. I think it's kind of an interesting time in the NBA where there are a lot of young personalities kind of injecting themselves and making them sort of main characters of the league. You've got older guys having incredible seasons as well. You've got guys in between as well, kind of, you know, in their primes doing their thing. I just think it's like a really cool tapestry of players across the league right now. Lots of different stories and arcs to be following, and determining who the coolest player in the NBA is ultimately is, I think, more important than determining who the best team is. Basketball is about being cool, and I would much rather watch a team that is cool than a team that is good and not cool. Let's dive in here, Katie. I guess to begin here, before we sort of bring our candidates to the front, what's your criteria that you look for when it comes to cool NBA players, Katie? Is there something that kind of across the board speaks to you? Is it sort of a case-by-case basis with specific guys maybe leaning into their own personality traits a little bit more? Like, what is your sort of like rubric for coolness when you're evaluating NBA players?
I think it starts with comfort, like a certain comfort in their own skin and being comfortable with themselves, and kind of like being all in, but like not being so all in on themselves. Like, there's a fine line, right, between being too egotistical and like self-aware to just being comfortable. And I think like that kind of spreads out into definitely their game, but definitely things that they do off court too. I think it's cool. This is going to sound really corny, but it is cool to care. So I feel like, you know, players that, again, a fine line, not so tied up in themselves that they're just like, I think sometimes this is a good example is how bratty Luka Doncic can seem on court when he kind of grimaces and reacts to every single call. Not very cool.
Not on my list.
But like that's kind of one end of the extreme. But being really just like sometimes kind of turning and being visibly upset, I find like Fred VanVleet can be a good example of this. It's rare when he does it. Like that unflappability you see kind of broken, but he'll turn and, you know, if something is meaningfully upset, has upset him in a game, he'll call it out. So again, fine line, but that's usually how it goes with cool. Yeah, I mean, I think it's cool when you're kind of quirky, whether that's like you're funny, you have like your own personal style, you're not worried about appearing a certain way. So like you're gassing guys up if you're sitting on the bench or if you're out, you know, like you're not scared of just like looking a certain way because it doesn't matter if you think you're cool, you know, like you don't really care about how you are perceived. Yeah, I think that's like everything else is like more ambiguous because that's the thing with cool. To me, it's just more of a feeling and an understanding. And like, you know, when you see a cool person. And if you think you see a cool person and they're not a cool person, it will very quickly be apparent they are not, because they go too far over in one of these criteria.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. Is my criteria is like my guts more than anything else. It's like you see a guy and it's like, oh yeah, that guy's cool. It's not so much like I have a checklist that I'm looking for. I will say if there's one thing I'm looking for, it's like I would like a sort of unique play style. I like diversity of styles in basketball. I like when there's sort of two different teams that have dueling sensibilities. And obviously the sensibilities of teams are very much tied up in their best players. And so I like guys who are kind of one, who don't sort of, you know, as much as I love Steph Curry and Damian Lillard to like watch play basketball, I don't really subscribe to the, oh, give me like the high scoring guard who's going to score in the exact same play every single time around. That doesn't do it for me. And that's maybe an unfair characterization of Steph Curry, who runs around off ball and is a menace there. But, you know, he sort of laid the groundwork for a lot of these sort of guards who none of them make my list, frankly, except for one who I'm kind of on the fence about. But yeah, a lot of it is sort of an innate thing that you just kind of see it and you know. And I guess there's this sort of like off-court side of things too, right? Where, you know, how do they present themselves and what's their sort of personality away from the floor too? Because the personality obviously reveals a lot about them. So let's run through some players here, Katie. I have a list of 10 that I think are the shortlist for coolest player in the NBA right now. Did you assemble a list as well? What was your process in this exercise?
No, I just thought of this in my brain and they kind of assemble. Cool. So I don't know. Fair I'm enough. Sure I could get to 10 if you want me to, mm-hmm. But I'll see what I got.
Well, how about we do this? I'll run through my list, and if there's any overlap from yours, we'll talk about those guys. And then obviously you'll have your own submissions and you can bring those as well. But let's begin. I think this guy is probably the leader in the clubhouse and maybe is not the right person to start with because we might have reached the conclusion too early. But like John Morant is the coolest, right? Like he's got the play style thing down. Nobody moves like him. Nobody passes like him. No one really dunks like him. He's kind of his own entity. He has this sort of like gravitas to him where like the players around him very obviously realize he's cool as well. And he's like one to hitch their wagon to. I like he'll call people out. He'll do funny posts and like not be, you know, afraid of like, you know, talking shit. Like I love Ja Morant. I wish I were a Grizzlies fan. I suppose I could migrate and be a Grizzlies fan. And like I will be following Ja Morant's career throughout the next decade. And I'm so enraptured by watching him play basketball. It might be that it's not even a contest and he's the coolest player, full stop. What say you on Ja Morant, Katie?
Ja's cool. Definitely cool. I think he's still too young to be like the coolest player in the league. Mm-hmm. You know, like fair. He does have a lot of self-awareness, I think, for his age. But I would say like coolness can age like wine. Mm-hmm. And so I think he'll just get cooler. But no, I wouldn't say he's the coolest player in the league, in my opinion.
It's interesting you mentioned the idea of age because I have a couple of guys on my list who I wanted to get into regarding that. A couple more young guys, though, kind of in this maybe in the same vein. Anthony Edwards, I think, Katie, is someone who comes to mind pretty instantly. The fact that he dunks really, really hard really speaks to my sensibilities. And obviously, you know, great quote, great interview, funny guy, self-aware guy, not afraid to sort of you know, put his own teammates on blast, even his very good teammates like Karl Anthony Towns. And it seems like his teammates like that and appreciate that. I think that's cool. Where is Anthony Edwards kind of in like the jaw tier for you where it's like, yes, cool guy of the future, but maybe too young to really have that sort of mantle right now?
If I had a list, he would have been on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Anthony Edwards is great because I think also he shows this kind of rare thing where his perspective is founded in the sense that it really goes beyond basketball. And I think that's why he can appear sometimes just so, because I would never say it's uninterested, but he's just like, he's not really taken with the same things, you know, and like the kind of heat of the moment and like this intensity and the inclination to like, I don't know. Just view everything as like in such a tiny microcosm and insular world of basketball. Like you can tell in his mind and the way he looks at basketball and the world, like he sees himself far beyond this, you know, in years to come. And I like that because I think that's a certain level of gravity that you don't necessarily see with young stars or even like some older players in the league. You don't see that with fans. Like you don't really, you got to remind yourself of that sometimes. So I think that's actually what makes him so cool. and so much cooler than a lot of other players. But I wouldn't say he's the coolest.
Right, right. And I guess probably a similar and maybe even a harder case to make for LaMelo Ball, who I think play style wise, absolutely give it to me.
I don't think LaMelo's very cool at all.
Yeah, I mean, like personality wise, I guess I don't really know him enough as a person. I guess play style wise is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like the passes he throws, incredibly cool, but maybe being a Ball kind of excludes you from this conversation.
Yeah, you're kind of doomed because we're never going to know your own sense of like self-awareness or like
sure
how, because you're always going to eclipse yourself in a way, right? I'd say Lonzo's kind of coming out of that in a really nice way and like honestly cool way. I do in part, I think, to playing on the Bulls team, playing alongside DeMar DeRozan, which I like a lot. I don't think Lonzo is, Lonzo's more of kind of like a nice nerd to me, which like can be cool too. But no, I would not put LaMelo alongside these guys we've mentioned so far.
I got another one for you. And I have a hard time with this because I tend to find it's difficult to classify like the super duper star tier of NBA players as like super cool. I mean, I think Jimmy Butler is probably in there. Maybe he'll come up when you kind of go through your brain list. You know, obviously, I think there are other couple of guys who are going to come up here, but I think it's difficult because there is like this sort of inherent lack of self-awareness when you're at that level in the NBA. That's kind of like part of the whole deal that maybe kind of cuts into the coolness of it all. And we'll get to this with LeBron as well, because I have a theory on LeBron I want to run by you. But a guy like Nikola Jokic, who just won MVP, he to me strikes me as incredibly cool because of the lack of shits that he gives. And like, it seems like the entire NBA seems like kind of unenthused by what he does, even though what he does is literally unprecedented and he might actually just be the best player in the world. And he doesn't seem like he cares about any of the titles or sort of, oh, yeah, I can't imagine he would give a shit if someone was like, I think you're the best player in the world. I just don't think that. I think that would roll off of his back and that would be just like another thing he heard that day and not really move the needle for him. And I think that rocks. Like, am I misreading Jokic, do you think? And do you think he qualifies at all to be the coolest player in the NBA? Because like play style wise, 100%, it's the best type of basketball player in my estimation that there is, a big man who does cool passes. Hell yeah. But as far as the rest of it, like I could see a case either way, I suppose.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because he kind of shares that same like rejection almost of like the trappings of cool. I'd say like a lot of players who didn't grow up in the States, and I guess in Canada now with like a lot of Canadian guys in the league, but this like very Western idealized way of like, I don't know, like your brand and your image, you know, like this awareness of it at such a young age. Like my favorite thing about Jokic is it always just seems like he's at work. Like the NBA season is just him being at work and he's working to get back to what he really loves, which is harness racing in the summer and like spending time with his horses. And I mean, I like that because it's like outside interests, right? I think it's funny that his brothers, I mean, I just think his brothers are hilarious. I think that it's funny that he, among his brothers, obviously, and his family has this like identity as like a shy, younger, little brother, and like you don't see that at all in his playing style, you know, and the way that he kind of presents himself in the league. Jokic is pretty cool.
Yeah. You would never know that he spent his childhood getting beat by his brothers with a pillowcase full of soap bars. Yeah.
Which honestly has probably made him cool. Like frankly, there's a lot of people who think they're really cool and could use a roughing up by Jokic's brothers at a tender young age.
Yeah, a Moore's brother, for example, could perhaps use that. I got a couple guys I want to throw by you here. One is, I mean, we've already talked about him, DeMar DeRozan. You know, I think he's probably on the short list considering the arc of his career and all of that. Maybe we don't have to dive too far into him. If you have thoughts, please share. But the other guy I want to talk about sort of on the longer end of the tooth, the older sort of tier of guys here, is Kevin Durant. The other sort of superstar tier guy I have on my list who has, you know, very clearly, I mean, I don't know. He's a tough one because I don't know if he gives a shit what people think or if he doesn't give a shit what people think or if it's somewhere in between. His actions have always kind of aligned with someone who doesn't give a shit what people think, but then the way he talks sometimes maybe kind of undercuts that. I don't really know how to peg Durant. I know he's cool. I know I like him, like, just like roasting people online. That's fun to me. Maybe roasting people online is inherently uncool. Who's to say? Is Kevin Durant cool, Katie?
Yeah, I think he is. I think the fact that you don't really know and like he doesn't seem to know and sometimes is like super self-involved and too self-aware and other times isn't is good because it also just shows that like it's you gotta change your mind about yourself, right? You don't always like stay fixed in the same kind of mental state. At least I hope you don't. So, you know, to me, that's good. But the one thing I will say, and like I always think about this, is like there was a story of like someone who went on a date with him and he just was like on his phone the whole time or like really disinterested. And then at the end of the date was just like, do you want to come back to my house? The woman was like, no, like you didn't even really talk to me. So to me, like, I know this is a secondhand story, but I can visualize it happening. And like, that's not very cool to me. So I think I'll always have to like take him a peg down because of that.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I do think there's something to the idea of onlineness, perhaps inherently having an uncool sort of tenor to it. And you know, if James Harden is going to be on this list, it's because of, quote, he doesn't have the internet. Thank you, Young Thug. another guy I want to run by you is Trae Young, who I think kind of had a bit of a cool moment in the playoffs last year. This is, okay, I agree, I think. But I think there's this sort of, like, he's had this coolness glow up, I think, because he, like, roasted the Knicks in Madison Square Garden, and that, like, kind of helped his case last year. But I agree. I don't think he's cool, but I think he's kind of had this cool wave kind of around him that I don't know if is entirely deserved and is maybe, like, oh, okay, cool, you beat the Knicks. Like, maybe everyone should just do that, and it's not that big a deal. You don't think he's cool?
I liked him exploring that kind of caricature of being a villain. Uh-huh. I think it was a good departure because I think the thing for me about Trae Young is he's too self-aware all the time.
Right.
And I think he's pretty tied up in the trappings of that. So, you know, again, like you saw him, like seeing him do that in the playoffs, I thought was great. It does. So maybe like he'll move in that direction. But yeah, to me, He's too aware of like what he thinks is and should be cool to be cool.
Yeah, that's fair. And you know, I guess maybe this is one of those things where there could be some myth building still to be done. You know, he's going to take on, you would assume, the Knicks at some point again in the postseason. Maybe there's further Spike Lee ownage going on, and maybe he kind of grows further into that full villain persona as opposed to just kind of dabbling into it. And maybe that changes our perspective on him. But I agree. I don't think he's cool, even though he maybe has been branded as such lately. Jarrett Allen is someone I have on my list, Katie, specifically for you. Is Jarrett Allen the coolest player in the NBA?
He's not the coolest, but he is very cool. He's a good example of the cool nerd, which I talked about earlier. He is like obsessed with like computers. He builds computers. He's like has interests. He's like kind of a geek. He's so good at what he does, but he's like very kind of like, what else am I going to do about it? You know, he seems super nice, very kind, his off court and then on court, his teammates all seem to really love him wherever he is. And he like knows he's incredibly good. He's like the leading, you know, I don't know it now. I've lost count, but when I wrote about him a couple months ago, he was like leading in dunks for the season. I think his total career were like set in the 700s at that point. But he's still like, I want to get better. And like, I don't just want to do this one, like arguably the coolest thing you can do in basketball. It's not all he wants to be known for, right? Like he's like, oh, I'm kind of curious about like my defensive game. I want to try my hand at like playmaking, which I think is great because you want to, you know, obviously I'm incredibly biased, but I don't think he is the coolest because I think in some ways he's like too busy. I don't want him to be the coolest. He's like too busy to be the coolest.
Right, right.
Maybe too sweet to be the coolest too.
I like that. The last guy I have on my list here, and it's got two question marks next to it because I don't know if it's actually legitimate. But I had this thought last night. I was watching the Lakers play the Kings, which I don't know why I was watching this game. It was a bad game. And it was a fun finish between two bad teams. But LeBron's been kind of on a heater lately. Not kind of. He's been like incredible lately. And I had this sort of vision of a future LeBron where he's maybe given up the sort of constant lust for titles. Or it's like, it's not like everything is all about building the team for that specific season. And instead, he's more sort of pivoted to like being the elder statesman of the NBA, who kind of indoctrinates the next wave of guys who are old enough to be his children into the NBA by like going out and punking their asses intentionally every single night. There's something about like an old man version of LeBron who's kind of beyond being one of the two or three best players alive and fighting for titles every year that I really am excited to explore. I don't know if it'll end up being cool because obviously there's a lot of corniness tied to LeBron James, but I do wonder if maybe sort of being free of the shackles of every season having to be title or bust might open him up to something a little bit more cool overall. Is that at all a thing you think is in the future for LeBron James, or his overall sort of persona and, you know, constant sort of, you know, very clear awareness of his own personal branding and all of that? Like, is that always going to undercut his coolness?
Yeah, no, LeBron's not cool to me. LeBron, I don't think, can be cool to me anymore after all this stupid shit he said about COVID and like his weird takes on like, I don't know, scientific information as a whole. The strange thing, he was like, I was so hard done by, I had to come home by myself from Sacramento. I was put out for a day, when he's like, so it was like the first time you're kind of seeing this divestment from the LeBron that has, as a brand and a persona, makes himself so much of like, yeah, I remember where I've come from. Like, I am familiar with right. like the American every person. But then you kind of saw the parallel to that, right, in the things that he said this season off court, where it's like, you live in a pretty well curated bubble for yourself. And to me, that kind of like your self-awareness has to be rooted in the world that you live in. And like, that's actually a huge part of what makes somebody cool or not. And he doesn't have that anymore. And I think for so long, he's also been concerned, whether or not he stops title chasing, I think he's still really concerned with image, right? And like this myth making and building like his legacy, and almost like legacy chasing at this point, which sucks. And like all of this is, of course, not to like squelch the good that he's done and like how phenomenal of a player he is. Like, LeBron is known as like LeBron, one person, like a first name, because of all of that. Like, there is some inherent coolness to that. Like, he will always, you know, he's a Michael Jordan now, right? Then that's, I don't know the next time that's gonna happen. Maybe with Giannis, I don't know, but for different reasons. So, but to me, he's just like, he is beyond, and I don't mean he's beyond cool. It's just like, he's beyond this kind of qualification for it. And I don't think it really matters to him. He's also like, he's one of those people who thinks, I think he thinks he's quite cool because he can, you know, he like buys certain clothes and like drinks certain wine and buys certain art and drives certain cars and has certain partnerships and knows certain celebrity people. And like, sure, if that's where he's at and he's like, I'm cool now, I'm happy for him. But to me, no. And honestly, I really cannot get over how like dangerous his stance was on public health, basically.
Yeah, no, that's a pretty big thing to try to overcome, which I think I agree with you. As much as I think like the on-court version could have some sort of real endearing quality to it, I agree that ultimately He's LeBron James. He's like, his whole thing is that he's corny by trade. So, you know, you throw that in with the, you know, substandard public health chit chat, and it becomes a difficult case to make. Katie, do you have any players who I have not brought up as the potential candidates to be the coolest player in the NBA that you want to dive into here? Perhaps do you have your choice for coolest player that I have not brought up yet?
Yeah, I have Klay Thompson, who I find is strange that you missed. But very cool. What I like the most about Klay, I mean, it's hard to pin it down, but like, I like that he is obviously like has been struggling the past few seasons, not playing and in his recovery, because like physically and mentally that is going to take a toll on you, like the physical process of recovery, but then also being away from the community that you've had for so long and this like game that you love. But that in that he was like, I need a hobby. Like, I think I need a hobby. I think it would be good for me. And he, like, went and explored that. Boating, swimming. Like, and I don't mean, like, swimming, like, I'm just going to dip around here and there. Like, you know, he started to, like, swim in the bay and, like, talk with swimmers and people who did that. So regardless of whether or not those things continue once he comes back, which I think is supposed to be, what, this Sunday, which is great. And he's also just, like, I don't know, he's really funny. He can be super corny, but I don't think he really cares about it. He has like says his dog is his best friend, and I believe him. But he's not one of those lame people that are like, my dog is my child type of people. He loves chess. His dad is super funny and cool. Like,
yep.
His dad is like one of the best people on Twitter, honestly. Mm-hmm. I think he just has a really good perspective, and he knows he's just like a superstar player and like a super celebrity, but it's like, you still feel like you could just, you know, talk with him about whatever. And I think an important distinction to make is like, some people who are like really concerned with being cool don't ever want to be like, oh, I don't know about that. Or like, I'm not sure, or like admit that they're wrong in certain things. And I think he has a certain self-awareness where he wouldn't be afraid to do that.
Yeah, I think the case for him on its own is really compelling, but I think it's also helped by the fact that he plays on a team that is decidedly uncool. And like, the Warriors are great and they're fun to watch and all of that, but like, Draymond, extreme tryhard, not cool. Steph Curry, one of the biggest cornballs in, like, challenges LeBron for cornball energy, I would argue. The whole franchise has like a really disgusting Silicon Valley ass vibe, deeply uncool. And yet Klay Thompson just kind of seems immune to all of that and maintains this sort of this level of radness that I think is awesome. That's a really good contender. Do you have any others, Katie, before we try to make a final decision on who the coolest player is, in fact, in the NBA today?
I think Bam Adebayo is really cool. I think Bam is a really good example of a player who keeps his personal life personal and separate, but like is also just like a crazy, like very ferocious competitor and cares deeply about that. But just in like the kind of stuff you've seen of like how he values his family and like the community and just like seems kind of keeps that stuff really close to the chest, you know? I mean, I know that because there have been like just hearing in like interviews who he will do or won't do. He doesn't really like to do the ones where he's going to have to talk about himself that much. Like, he'll do it around kind of things he's like causes he's taken or work that he's doing, but it's not really just to talk about like his star being on the rise, for example. Yeah, I don't know. He just also seems like a really nice dude who cares a lot. And I think he is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a good one too. I wonder if maybe we should try to come to a conclusion on this one, Katie. I feel like we'll probably have different answers, and that's totally fine. Cool is in the eye of the beholder.
I still have one more.
Oh, you have one more. Okay, my bad. Please take it away.
Yeah, Sean, like you had a whole list. You got to just give me
some. Yes, I know. Carry on.
Well, actually, my last one is just the person who all along, like through everyone we've talked about, it hasn't swayed me. But I think the coolest person in the league is PJ Tucker for like pretty much all of the reasons we've said. This is a guy who like, left he like left the NBA basically because he didn't know how he would have a clear path to it, but he saw like, oh, I'm gonna have a clear path if I go play overseas, hopefully. Came back, had all these just like honestly to most players would just seem so like offended by these kinds of assignments. But with every team he played for, he took it extremely seriously. He's extremely good at what he does. Like winning a title where he was at in his career is super cool. And like, that's just the on-court stuff, you know, like, I do not condone violence, but there is something about PJ Tucker, just like his protectiveness I've seen with players, and just the fact that like most guys would look at him and realize it's not worth it. Like, it's the thing. He's not like fighting. He's not like a fighter. It's just, he's good, like a good shutdowner. And then like off court, like the dude loves pancakes and like just always is like basically blogging about which pancakes he goes and eats in the cities that he's in. The shoe thing is cool. I mean, I'm not like a sneaker person, but I think what's even cooler is that like he wears all his sneakers and he thinks it's dumb when people don't. He thinks it's dumb when people collect sneakers and are like keep them pristine in a box somewhere just for the sake of owning them. He likes sneakers because he really likes to wear them. I really like the way that he's gotten into fashion kind of by himself. You know, he started showing up at fashion weeks in like Paris and Venice and like getting really interested in like the construction of clothing, you know, and like the history there. I think that's super cool because fashion is another one of these like smoke and mirror-y things in the NBA. Like guys can look cool, but not necessarily have a sense of style. I think he really does. And he's just like one of the coolest, like seemingly level-headed, cool as a cucumber style dudes on and off court all the time. Yeah, to me, it's PJ Tucker because there is like a longevity to his coolness that is absolutely not hinged on anything. He could stop playing basketball, he'd be the coolest. He could stop being interested in shoes and fashion, he'd still be the coolest to me. It is like a coolness that extends beyond the moment.
That is extremely well put. I think it's a very, very compelling case. There's just so much cool to be mined with PJ Tucker. And you're right. I think like, he's going to show up to events after he's retired and be the coolest person in the room as well. So I think that's a really, really, really good one. You might have actually swayed me, Katie. I might just say PJ Tucker. Although I think my ultimate choice here is Nikola Jokic. I think like, and a lot of this, I think we've kind of maybe sort of talked this through, is that I maybe value like the on-court aesthetic a little bit more in sort of my evaluation of this, which is totally fine. Everyone, again, cool is in the eye of the beholder. And I just, I can't get over the just how fucking fun it is to watch Nikola Jokic pass around a bunch of dudes and then also score on them whenever he wants. It's just the best thing in the world. The fact that he's like carrying this Nuggets team that has nobody healthy to like the fifth seed is pretty damn cool as well. I think I'm on Jokic being the coolest player, but PJ Tucker, extremely, extremely compelling choice. Klay Thompson as well. All of your arguments, Katie, very good. I'm not surprised, as you are the arbiter of cool. So I'm not surprised you have good salient takes on this. By the way, we were talking about the Hall of Fame, maybe to close this off with a little bow. PJ Tucker's the type of guy I would gladly put in the Hall of Fame. Like, he's a major part of a very long chunk of NBA history. Even if he didn't score 25 points a game during it, a lot of teams don't really exist in the form that they exist without him. So, yeah, put him in the Hall. I don't care. He's awesome. And he's the exact type of guy. There should be a wing for there should be called the PJ Tucker wing, frankly. There should be guys of PJ Tucker's ilk. Katie, any final thoughts? Any last conclusions?
Mm-mm. I've said
no.
My piece.
Right. Excellent. We will move on then to the way we close out every episode of the podcast with the posters of the week. I'm not going to lie to you, Katie. I've been very bad at keeping up with NBA internet. I'm trying to be on the internet less lately, but I did come across a DeLon Wright photo of him and Norman Powell on the court yucking it up. And that would have touched my heart. Two guys who were on the Raptors very early in their careers have taken very disparate paths to where they are now. And it always warms my heart when dudes connect on the floor in later parts of their careers after being teammates. So maybe that's a bad one. Maybe it's a cop-out just because it's what I was finding while I was scrolling through this morning on my Instagram stories. But that's my pick. I apologize for not having a better one. But it's because I'm trying to be healthier and not online so much, Katie. Any posters of the week for you?
Mine is Greg Monroe, who we talked about earlier. Yeah. But he posted... I think it, like, on New Year's Day or the day after, kind of, like, everybody's posting, like, you know, look backs on the year. But his looked so much fun. He was just, like, genuinely, almost every picture, as I flipped to it, I was like, whoa, just, like, he's been everywhere. And it just, like, seemed to, like, hang out with his friends and just, like, be having fun and enjoying himself. And I was very happy for him.
I'm very happy to see Greg Monroe back in the NBA, mostly for you, Katie. Really, really happy for you personally. Let's round it out there. That's going to do it for this week's episode. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Thanks for putting up with the week away, and hope you enjoyed the best of last week. And of course, we'll be back with regular episodes all throughout the rest of the NBA season. Of course, you can jump into our Patreon page and support us over there, patreon.com/abasketball. $4 US, $5.50 Canadian gets you into our Patreon and gets you access to our mailbag episodes, of which there will be one next week. So please get your questions into us either in the Discord or on Twitter or wherever it might be. Please send us over those questions. It would be very much appreciated. And Katie, anything that you have to promote for the good people out there?
Yeah, I profiled Jonathan Kuminga. So that's it. Yeah. Dime. That was a great conversation. Really funny, really thoughtful young dude. I'm also writing about DeMar DeRozan. So that's going to be out on Real GM at some point this week.
Fantastic. Everyone go and read that. Also, read Basketball Feelings. It's the best thing I pay money for. Everyone should go check it out. And Katie, this was awesome. For me, you can find me on Twitter at Woodley Sean. You can subscribe to Locked On Raptors, wherever you get your podcasts, and watch on YouTube as well. Katie, I'm going to ask you to come on an episode after we're done recording here. Anyway, that's going to do it. We will talk to you again next week with another episode of Basketball. And a huge thank you, as always, to our wonderful producers, Greg and Dylan, for hanging out with us and making us sound so good. Have a good week, everybody. I'll talk to you soon.